Hello, and welcome to the South African History Archives' Freedom of Information Program podcast. The purpose of this podcast is to have conversations with various individuals around the right to access of information in South Africa. Welcome to SAHA's Freedom of Information podcast series on the issues around access to information in South Africa. The purpose of these podcasts are to have a diverse range of conversations around the history and progression of access to information in South Africa, some of the challenges that we're facing, and where we hope to get to as a country, because we know that access to information, it is a cornerstone of any functioning democracy. So on the 28th today is the International Right to Information Day, which has really just come to be known as the International Right to Know Day. And we here at SAHA are celebrating it as an organization that is concerned about access to information. And we thought, who better to have than as our first guest on the International Right to Know Day than Mlulegi, who works at the Right to Know campaign in South Africa. So hi, Mlu. Welcome.
Hi, Nobu. Thank you for having us and for the invite.
Yeah, thank you. I'm glad that you're here. Maybe you can just tell us a bit about yourself and what Right to Know South Africa does.
So I currently work for the Right to Know campaign. I work as an access to information organizer, as they call it. And I work on, in addition to that, I work on issues of participatory democracy. The Right to Know campaign is a movement of civil society organizations, mostly community-based organizations, that aims to strengthen people's ability to access information, whether from the state or from the corporate sector. The second leg of the campaign is working on secrecy and surveillance. So where there's deliberate intention to hide certain information. And one of the key examples there is the National Key Points Act in SA, which aims to prohibit the publication of certain buildings that no one knows about, like which building it is, and it gives heinous powers to the state to punish such publication of those buildings. It could be parliament, it could be whatever building they decide is of national interest to them. So that's what the campaign works on.
Okay, that's great. So International Right to Know Day is about empowering people to access their right to know, because we know that transparency means that there's less corruption. And as a country here in South Africa, since the beginning of the history that we can remember, even pre-apartheid times, corruption has been a really big issue that has plagued our societies. And it's coming more and more to the forefront now because of social media and other ways in which people can access to information. But here in South Africa, we have the Promotion of Access to Information Act that specifically is designed to ensure that people can access public records. And so PAYA, as a legislative tool, was enacted to curb some of these issues of secrecy and promote transparency. But we know, you and I in practice, that PAYA isn't really achieving most of what it is meant to achieve, and that transparency is not the goal that we've reached yet. And so maybe for today, I just thought it would be great if you could give us a roundup of the three most pertinent issues in South Africa that are affecting our right to know.
Thank you for the questions. The first item would be the information regulator. This is an institution that has been created by legislation such as BOPI and PAYA, as you've said. And this institution is supposed to guard, so to speak, our right of access to information and our right to have our personal information protected. The institution, surprisingly, was only set up in 2016. And yet, even 2 years after its establishment, it is some of its powers are still not yet in force because of, I would call it, bureaucratic hurdles. So they had to first compare that their institution with other institutions that exist internationally to come up with an organogram that best suits their institution. And it took them almost 2 years to come up with that organogram. And then after compiling an organogram, they to then consult with National Treasury about that organogram and get thumbs up from Treasury, and they'll be fully operational. So this would have meant that their powers to investigate, their powers to punish offenders would be in place, but that hasn't happened yet. So the first issue for me would be the operationalization of the information regulator.
So do you think that because the, well, let me actually say this. In terms of PAYA, you know, before the information regulator was the body that was responsible for compliance of PAYA, we were supposed to be able to approach the South African Human Rights Commission or the Public Protector as already existing Chapter 9 institutions that were meant to monitor compliance. And if you had a report, you should have been able to report your issues to them. But we've seen that that hasn't worked really well. And I know this is such a bit of a difficult question, but why is it that you think that the South African Human Rights Commission and the Public Protector, their roles as the safeguards of PAYA thus far, haven't really fulfilled their mandates?
It's interesting when you mention the Public Protector, because the Public Protector in, well, except for the last year, before that, the last 8 or 7 years or so, has been in the media quite a lot for groundbreaking investigations into corruption issues. And yet, on the other hand, as you say, in respect of PAYA and the Protection of Personal Information Act, BOPI, we haven't seen them on the forefront of protecting personal information. And the reason it's so interesting is that my answer would be that it's because of specialization. The Public Protector has a clear identity on corruption fighting. This could have been because of whoever headed the institution at the time. It's just that it's in its architecture, it was designed to protect against corruption. And that's why we saw it doing the work that it did. And so I would say the failure has been in an establishment of an institution that specializes in the protection of personal information. Mm-hmm. That has been the failure. Because then you've got an institution like the Human Rights Commission, which is struggling with funding in its core mandate. And now you lump it with an additional mandate of protecting personal information or of access to information, the PAYA function. It becomes even more stranded in terms of resources, human or financial. So I think that has been the greatest challenge, that we didn't establish the information regulator as soon as possible. We wanted other institutions to just have all the functions in the world. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. That is an excellent analysis. And we've had engagements with the public, with the information regulator. And so there is hope that hopefully soon enough, the information regulator will become fully operational. But in light of the existence of the information regulator, and what would you say is the second most pertinent issue in terms of the right to know in South Africa?
Before that, can I just for a couple of seconds say, I think the issue of operationalizing the information regulator is still going to be unresolved for the next year or two, or even 3 years, because at the heart of that dispute, Treasury, which is supposed to give the information regulator thumbs up, it wants to categorize the information regulator as a Schedule 3 company. Mm-hmm. That means it's going to be an institution that reports to a cabinet member. Mm-hmm. The information regulator, on the other hand, says we can't be reporting to a member of the executive because Section 39 of FOPIA says we are accountable to Parliament. So we are a constitutional body. And so there's that deadlock. Mm. And as Right to Know, we've been trying to get both bodies to just agree on something so that those powers of the information regulator are operationalized. I just wanted to say that we're still going to have to see, we still have to fight this operationalization of the information regulator for the next couple of years.
Well, I certainly hope it doesn't take a couple of years because the issue that you raised earlier with me about the data breaches, we don't have a couple of years. So maybe you can just get into that as the second issue.
As a second issue, I wouldn't say I think the idea of data breaches exists in the same sphere as operationalization of the information regulator. Mm-hmm. You have an inactive institution that is supposed to be investigating, that's supposed to be punishing those who misbehave, and it's not doing that. And in the last year already, we had Master Deeds data breach. We had the Facebook breach. We had more recently the Liberty breach.
Mm.
And more recently, we've got banks that have been breached. We've got a cell phone network provider that has been breached. So I'd also say it's just one issue.
Mm.
The second issue for me, I would say, is compliance with the current legislative framework. So as you've said, we've got the Promotion of Access to Information Act, which gives people the power to ask for whatever information they want from a state body, from a corporation, from an individual, information that they, the requester, are going to use in order to exercise a particular right. Compliance with those provisions of PAYA non-compliance is just a problem in the sector. So firstly, in my work, you'll find that once we've submitted a PAYA request asking for particular information, we'll be told we need an extension. And the determining of how much that extension is on the body you've asked for information for. They just give us a number. It's like, give us 30 more days, give us 40 more days. And you have no idea why. They don't say we're considering it. They don't say we're studying. They just say, give us more time. After you've voted for that time, they either don't respond, or if they do respond, they give you a nonchalant, no, we won't give you information. Then the problem begins. If it's an institution with an internal appeal mechanism, then you can go through that. But most people don't have enough resources to be pursuing these issues for that long. So most of the people we work with are individuals in communities who just want to know, hey, how many houses are going to be built in my community? So it's those issues. And we're also stretched because we've got communities across the country asking us to follow up on very minor issues that are easily resolvable. And then you've got, once you've exhausted an internal appeal, you have litigation. If you've failed, if government says, we're not giving you this information, even though you've internally appealed, you now have to go to the courts. Courts are expensive even for us as an NGO. How much more than for individuals, for community-based organizations, and so forth. So, and we're seeing, because institutions know about these hurdles, they use them. They want you to go to litigation. They want a judgment granted against them, and then they'll comply. But not many of us can arrive at a judgment point.
Here at SAHA, we have recently seen, just trend-wise, an increase in the reliance of Section 23 of PAYA. Now, Section 23 of PAYA is essentially, if the information does not exist or cannot be found, then the information officer simply signs an affidavit stating the steps that they've taken. And now, they are meant to state the steps that they've taken, to say we look for this information or it doesn't exist, and then they produce the Section 23 as a valid reason for not releasing information. But what we're seeing is they just give Section 23 affidavits. Quite recently, we did a PAYA request where we requested for information for a tender contract. Now, this tender was only recently put up about 4 months ago. It's on the website that they called for it, and the names of the companies that received the tender are listed on their website. So we did a request asking for the service delivery agreements and the contracts and all those documents, and they just responded with the Section 23 affidavit, which is illogical.
Yes.
You're like, what do you mean the information doesn't exist? Did you enter into a contract with a private company and not keep a contract? Did you just verbally agree that they'll become a service provider? You're a state institution. And so definitely compliance with PAYA as it exists. But also I would go further and say failing to comply with PAYA as it exists, but PAYA as it exists also has deficiencies. Because if once they've produced a Section 23 affidavit, this requires then for us to go and litigate. And extend the work. This requires us to go and litigate and go and then say to the court, please, can you extend the definition or the meaning of Section 23 of PAYA, and the for court to clarify what steps need to be taken and what activities would be justifiable as adequately searching for the information. And that's like you said, litigation is difficult. I don't know. I'm sure you know very well. We've spoken about this before, but SAHA has kindly engaged in litigation, and we've received in the first round, hopefully, which will be overturned, obviously, at appeal, but a shocking costs order when we were just trying to enforce a constitutional right to access to information. So the fact that people are left having to go to court is an incredible deterrent for a small community that just wants to know, like you've said, why the houses aren't being built or why the local municipality officer's cousin got the contract. And some of and that's just it. But do you think that it is necessary to amend PAYA? Or if the deficiencies are within PAYA, do you think we need to litigate more to create more jurisprudence that fleshes out PAYA as it is? Or do you think perhaps it's a deeper institutional issue with public bodies and their sometimes seemingly disregard to the value of the right to know?
In the last, has been 9 years already, we've had a situation where in government, the fish has definitely rotten from the head. You had a president who just couldn't be held accountable, didn't want to be held accountable. And that attitude of impunity is then replicated throughout government. So there's definitely is an attitudinal problem in government, in that government thinks they are kings and queens in the medieval era, and that they're not operating within a democratic dispensation. That's the first problem. The second one, you have this issue of, go back again to it, of the information regulator. If you had fully established regulator, that could be a that could intervene before litigation, that could make pronouncements about, hey, what does Section 23 mean? And those pronouncements are taken with seriousness, maybe not of a judgment, but of an institution that actually is the guardian of this right. That would help a lot. But you then have a situation where the information regulator would be inundated with all of these minor requests from, and I say minor because these are not, it shouldn't take a lot to give us a budget for housing, to give us our IDP budget in this community. So it'll be inundated with all of those things, but that's just a discussion for another day. For now, you need an institution that can assist in this chain of litigation. Break that chain, institutionalize or operationalize the information regulator to make these pronouncements that we need, to assist community members who want to internally appeal, who want those internal appeals overturned. That's what we need, a strong information regulator that has these powers.
And definitely, there's also issues that, you know, PAYA is meant to be... So the default in South Africa is access. That is the default in terms of information. And PAYA is meant to regulate access. It's not meant to limit access. It's the default is access in South Africa. And that means that also there is other legislation that ensures that there's access, especially at the municipality level. So like IDP stuff, you shouldn't have to do a PAYA request with it, because it should readily be available. Development plans, any strategies, any budget changes, contracts, who you're paying, what the people are earning. And so what, and I agree with you, it's just this a culture of impunity, because it's not just failing to comply with PAYA, it's failing to comply with a host of other legislation. And then it forces a burden on PAYA, which was never actually intended to be there. PAYA was never meant to deal with all these things, because there's legislation that grants certain access already. But people are forced to then rely on PAYA when that wasn't its purpose.
Which is then, do we even need PAYA then? Is the next question. I mean, there are debates we're having at work around whether PAYA is an obstacle as opposed to being a vehicle for access. Because with for some of the obstacles we find for communities, there's a the fee you have to pay to access information. And many of the communities will come to us, say, we can't afford this. Can you guys pay for it? And we, I mean, we could pay for one or two. But if you think about how many communities we work with around the country, that's those are thousands of rands that we would have to just pay for to access information. So it is a debate that we need to have with, can we simplify PAYA? Can we maybe have educational programs for municipalities, people in government, people in society? Or is it just mere impunity regardless of education? So we just need penal mechanisms that could come from institutions like the information regulator.
Yeah, no, and I mean, that's good because here at SAHA, our Freedom of Information Program, we have developed some materials that are meant to train local government officials in how to be compliant with PIA and ancillary legislation in terms of access to information. And we've also just finished a video series of taking some of that information into training videos so that they can watch it. And we are trying to get into partnership with a lot more municipalities, because in as much as it's important for communities to know their rights, there are situations where beyond impunity, a lot of information officers don't actually know what their responsibilities are. And there is a lack of resources, or actually, I don't think it's a lack of resources, perhaps willingness at higher levels of government to train lower levels of government about how PIA works and its purposes. I mean, we've had hilarious responses to PIA requests where someone says, what is a PIA request? But they're listed on the website as an information officer. I'm like, what do you mean? You're an information officer. And then we walk through with them. We hold their hand, say, okay, when you receive a PIA request, this is what you do.
Yeah.
This is what you do. These are the appropriate responses. And so definitely civil society, it's difficult because we are here to serve civil society.
Yeah.
And then it becomes a secondary burden to now train government. But I think it's something that an area that in South Africa we probably have to grow in also as civil society organizations, to not just assume that they know what's happening. And that's what we're doing here at FOIP. And hopefully it will yield more compliance with PIA if more municipalities know exactly what their responsibilities are. And what is your third analysis?
Third gripe we have is the fact that the legislation that has been enacted to give us, to facilitate our access to information, doesn't cover political parties. This is a major problem in the country with such high rates of corruption at a state level, where we are unable to ask a political party to give us the list of names of people who have donated to it for its campaigning, how much money has been given to it, and what the conditions were for all of those monies. So this is a huge problem. It handicaps our ability to hold those we elect accountable. It impedes on our right to vote, because now we're voting for people who we have no idea where they're getting their money. We have no idea what obligations or promises they've made for receiving such money. So our right to vote and our right to hold them accountable is impeded by this issue of political party funding.
So we had an incredible Constitutional Court judgment that came out on My Vote Counts, and it dealt directly with this issue. There's a lot of stuff that happened in that judgment that we can't go through all of it now, but I think there's two main issues that stick out for me from that judgment. Firstly is that the court, you know, explicitly recognized that this is a right that South Africans have. They have a right to know who the political parties are getting their money from in order to fully exercise the right to vote, because the right to vote requires knowledge and information. And the second thing that came out in the concurring small dissent, the concurring secondary little, what is it called?
It is a concurring judgment.
It's just called a concurring judgment. Thank you, Mlu, former constitutional court clerk. Clearly, I could work on my legal language. But the concurring judgment that was there was, and it just touched briefly on the issue on how PIA doesn't give an obligation to produce records. And that is a very big issue. Because if there is currently if there's no real obligation to produce good records, and we've already spoken about the deficiencies in PIA, about how you can just say, we don't have it, we just didn't create it, then, you know, just what are your thoughts on that?
For me, it's very annoying, this debate, because after the judgment, we started a process of engaging political parties. We said, hey, the judgment...
As the right to know.
As the right to know. Mm-hmm. And my vote counts.
Mm-hmm.
So we said, hey, we've got this nice judgment here that says we can, as of now, access information around funding and who's funding you guys. So can you please give us that information? Only two parties responded.
Mm-hmm.
DA gave us not a comprehensive, it's quite a long response, essentially saying no. IFP gave us a short response, also saying no.
What was their reasons for saying no in light of this very specific court judgment?
Legal illiteracy, mm-hmm. or just that culture of impunity. Mm-hmm. So the first, legal illiteracy, they go through the judgment, citing portions of the judgment
mm-hmm.
that are not relevant for this issue. Because
mm-hmm.
if you understand the judgment, it dealt with whether currently PAEA
mm-hmm.
Gives us this right. And it said, no, PAEA doesn't give us this right.
Mm-hmm.
And Parliament needs to start a process mm-hmm. where they amend PAEA.
Mm-hmm.
And then the judgment went on to speak about what happens now. Because
mm-hmm.
there's a vacuum now, right?
Yeah, and there's elections coming
exactly.
up. And the court was very cognizant of that.
About that. So the end, they said, well, for now, because there's this vacuum, we can use not PAEA, but the Constitution itself.
Mm-hmm. Go directly to Section 32 of the Constitution.
So they only use the first part of that judgment. They're
mm-hmm.
like, no, the court said Parliament must start a process and we will support that process. Once that process has been finalized, we will then give you the information you want. But they ignore...
It's very strange because it was a very clear judgment.
It was a very clear paragraph.
I know you're being generous, but I think we'll go with legal illiteracy and impunity. Both of them are very
okay.
relevant here.
So yeah, that's... But they've said, I think one party said, they did acknowledge, I think all of them actually, that you're looking for, you want information, not just for now, but for the, we said in our request, give us information in the period covering the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they, all of the parties said, well, if you note the judgment, it did say that previously there's been no obligation on us
mm-hmm.
to keep these records.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in no position, I think they said, we don't have these records, or they say,
exactly.
Mm, so they
record creation is, but you see, even now post a judgment, that vacuum is still there,
still
and
there.
This is why the concurring judgment says the vacuum is still
exactly.
there,
exactly,
because there is no explicit, definitive obligation to create
yeah.
the records.
And we're going to elections that will be highly contested.
Mm.
I mean, the ruling party obviously is suffering a lot. It has suffered in the last 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of parties are hoping to at least gain a province or a municipality
mm-hmm.
and so forth. It's going to be highly contested.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a lot of money backing political parties, especially minority parties
mm-hmm.
that can unseat
yeah.
the ruling party in certain municipal regions.
And, you know, one of the things that we see with politics is that it's different parties, but
yes.
it's not that different. And
no.
and often for people to see just how not different they are, it's in the funders.
Yes. And there are funders who are betting.
There's people who just have enough money to bet on every horse,
exactly.
whichever horse wins.
Exactly. I mean, even you can even criticize this position of the ANC. They want to take land,
mm-hmm.
but we're not being told whether Oppenheimer's land will be taken.
Yeah.
Who we know has been funding the ruling party for some time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, these things, you can see that there's definitely someone behind who is influencing policy,
mm.
who's just, I'll fund the EFF because I know they won't take my land.
Mm.
I'll fund the DA because I know they'll give me whatever building I want
mm.
to buy in City Center, Cape Town. So it's a big problem that we're going to face in 2019 elections.
Well, it's a big problem, but we have amazing civil society organizations such as Right to Know that are working to ensure and protect our democracy. Lou, thank you so much for coming through. We appreciate you. You personally and R2K are great friends of us here at SAHA, and we look forward to what is surely going to be a very exciting 2019 year in terms of the right to access to information. Any closing words?
Let's continue the fight for information, for access to information and protection of personal information. And let's continue the relationship between SAHA and R2K and your funders, of course, OSF. So we really want to continue that relationship.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much, Mulu. Thank you to our amazing funders, OSF, for making this project possible. Happy International Right to Know Day. Thank you for joining us. I hope you enjoyed that. For more information, please visit our website on www.saha.org.za. Alternatively, you can go to www.foip.org.za.
www.ntk.za.